Support for this episode comes from Signature Bank.
Hey, this is Gary Head at Signature Bank of Arkansas. 20 years ago, we set out to build something different, a community bank that knows your name, values relationships, and gives our bankers the authority to serve you the way that you deserve. From our first location in Fayetteville to now serving families, farms, and businesses across Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, Harrison, Brinkley, and Jonesboro, we've grown, but our mission remains the same. Local, personal, trusted. With 210 passionate teammates and growing, we're proud to serve all of our communities, including through Banco C, our bilingual banking services in Rogers and Springdale. Whether you're starting your own business, buying a home, or planning for the future, Signature Bank is here for you. Call us today at 479-684-3700 or visit us online at signature.bank. And be sure to tell us you heard about us right here on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Searching for local businesses in Northwest Arkansas just got easier. From restaurants to roofers, boutiques to baristas, finditnwa.com connects you to the best local businesses with just one click. Discover something local, something great. Visit finditnwa.com today. Find it fast, find it local, finditnwa.com.
We are raising a generation of kids in a world that's radically different from the one we grew up in. A world where their social lives, hobbies, and even self-worth are shaped by algorithms, screens, and likes. And while technology has brought us closer in many ways, it's also stealing something far more precious, our time, our attention, and in many cases, our mental health. Today's guest knows this struggle intimately. Ian McCready, the founder of Self Control, once found himself consumed by video games and screen use to the point that it impacted his work, marriage, and family. But rather than stay stuck, he made a change, and that change turned into a mission to help others. He has now delivered speeches to more than 8,000 individuals in Northwest Arkansas, providing them with hope, tools, and a timely reminder, and he's just getting started. Let's dig into this important conversation.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn. I'm excited to be with you today. I've got a special episode for you, so special that I decided to do this video first. And I want to give a shout out right off the top to the great folks at podcastvideos.com right up here in Rogers, Arkansas. Eric Howerton, Parker Dodson, Peter Coca, the rest of the amazing team here at Podcast Videos will really take great care of you if you need to do a video podcast of any sort. And so I figured I would give it a twirl and see what it's like. And that's why we're here in the studios today recording this episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. But on top of that, the reason why I chose to want to do this podcast video first was because of the content that we're going to talk about today. And as I teased up at the top of the opening of this episode, we're dealing with an issue that is so pervasive, some of us don't even know we're even struggling with it. And a lot of you know what I'm talking about, but it's basically this device right here that controls our lives. I've got an iPhone 15 in my hand, and literally, I can do just about everything but set off a nuclear bomb with this thing. And I probably could do that depending if I had the right connections. Hopefully not, but I digress. But I'm trying to make a point that we now have the technology in our pockets to do so much with it, so much good for the world. But at the same time, the flip side of access to that type of technology and information and the device itself is the simple fact that it can become a major distraction in our daily lives. And that's why I've asked our next guest to join us today. And Ian is an outstanding individual. Actually, one of his folks that works for him reached out to me and said, hey, we would love to come on the podcast and talk about some of the things that our founder has learned about self-control, especially around digital devices and digital detoxes. And so we're going to get into all of that today and have a really good discussion. If you're a parent of a teenager or a soon-to-be teenager and you're struggling with what do you do about giving your kid a phone or your kid is overusing the phone that they currently have, this is the episode for you to really dig into and listen to. And you may want to bookmark it and come back and listen again a few more times, because I don't know about you, Ian, but I have constantly been studying this problem and how to deal with it with three teenage boys in my household. Mm-hmm. It is definitely pervasive, but I want to welcome you to the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast.
Thank you for having me, Randy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention a book that certainly is, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. The author actually came and spoke at Crystal Bridges along with our current governor, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And that is Jonathan Haidt, who wrote the book, The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. So folks, the stakes are truly high. If you're not familiar with this book, I highly recommend that you read it. Go to your public library, order it on Amazon. It's probably a book that you should have in your library that you can refer to because, again, as I said earlier, the stakes are high, and I think it's important for us to understand and learn how to deal with some of the problems that exist, but not even just for our kids, maybe even for ourselves. So I think that kind of makes sense. So, Ian, I hope I teed that up enough for you today, but man, I would love for you just to kind of introduce yourself to our audience and tell them a little bit about your background, because I know that just in the 20 minutes that we had in our preliminary conversation, you blew me away with some of the things that you've been through and really what compelled you to want to do and work on a program like self-control.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for covering how much of an issue this really is.
Yeah.
Because for me, I felt pretty isolated growing up. I felt like I was not someone who should have a problem. And so when I actually, like back when I was growing up, you couldn't be addicted to video games.
Right.
It wasn't even until 2017 that the World Health Organization classified gaming disorder as something you could have. So I was just a slacker back then.
Sure.
I liked to play too many video games, but I played video games growing up and they were never a problem. I was a good kid. I got good grades. I didn't get in trouble. And I think for my parents, those were the markers of success, right?
Yeah.
If you get good grades, you don't get in trouble. Well, good job. Like you've done what we've asked. And so my habit around video games never really became a bad habit. It never really got in the way of school or any of the things, extracurriculars even, until I went off to college.
Yeah.
And I went off to college and I got to live on campus all 4 years. And one thing that I think it's important for people to know, not all games are created equal.
Right.
When it comes to how addictive they are or how problematic they can be. But I started playing a game that is known for being addictive. And it was just back when it was first being released. So it didn't have the reputation it has now, but I started playing a game called World of Warcraft.
Oh, okay.
And it was freshman year. And by sophomore year, if you would have checked in on me, about halfway through sophomore year, I was playing about 12 to 14 hours a day.
A day.
On the days that I could. So I loaded up all my classes Tuesdays and Thursdays, so that I would have the other days completely free.
Oh my goodness.
Because I might have forgotten to go to class a few times.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I knew that was a bad thing because my parents didn't say, hey, school's important. So I did what I had to do and I loaded up my classes and I started saying no to friends hanging out on a Friday night and started Googling signs of video game addiction. And I realized, hey, this is a massive problem. But it wasn't until there was this in-game item. It was like the ultimate in-game item, right? And it was so rare, so hard to get this item. And I kept coming back to the game time and time again because video games have essentially, most modern video games have built in some sort of gambling mechanic.
Yeah.
And World of Warcraft had one of those. They had a gambling mechanic where essentially you beat a boss or you do your level, right? You don't just get the item you're going for. You get like a 3% chance to get the item. And that kept me coming back time and time again. And the item finally dropped. It finally was available for me. And in World of Warcraft, you play with a group of other players and I didn't get it. Mm. They gave it to the next person. And I'm so glad that because if I had gone a few months later, they would go on to release the first expansion for the World of Warcraft, and then they would release 8 more expansions. And I still know people back from the 2000s that 20 years later are still playing the World of Warcraft and have just grinded out and essentially gotten the next items. And then when they release an expansion, everything you worked for is immediately erased. Within a couple hours of playing the next expansion, all those items you got are completely worthless. So I essentially, I believe through divine intervention, got out of World of Warcraft. And I wish that's where radio all like, from that point forward, it was all better. But it wasn't, because I continue to play other games, but other games didn't have quite that addictive power of World of Warcraft. So I just had kind of a bad habit around games.
Yeah.
And in my 20s, there was more times than I care to admit that I pulled all-nighters on a work night because I just couldn't turn off the game or the level. And I always told myself, I'm never doing that again. Like, why do I keep doing this? You get in this shame cycle and I wouldn't tell people about it. Never really, always thought that I would be able to just kind of get out of it on my own. And I would set limits in place, and I couldn't. I couldn't get out of it on my own.
Yeah.
And in my marriage, it was causing me friction with my wife. I still remember her saying to me one day, hey, you'd rather just play video games tonight, huh? AKA, you would rather spend time with your game than with me.
Yeah.
And the scary part was, it was true. Like, selfishly, I just wanted some me time. I wanted to focus on myself. And then my daughter was born in 2017. And I was playing a game with her strapped to my chest. She was taking a nap. And my wife thought it was funny. So she kind of came in and snapped a photo of that. And like, you know, pretty good use of time, right?
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Multitasking. Yeah. But it's something in the back of my mind was saying, hey, when does this stop? And a little while after that, I was watching her. She was doing some tummy time on the floor. And I was playing a game, but I'm instinctually hiding it behind my leg. Because something in my brain is saying, I don't want her seeing her dad.
Yeah.
Even at this 6 months old age, ignoring her looking at a screen.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what I was doing. I was literally babysitting. I was sitting next to a baby doing what I wanted to do instead of parenting, instead of building that connection with my daughter. And not long after that, I went up to a retreat in the mountains and the speaker was talking about priorities. And I talk to a lot of people about this. I talk about priorities. Pretty much everybody has the same list, right? Like, so if you have faith, faith's usually title.
Sure.
Then it's like family,
right?
Number one. And then work, you know, friends. Friends are usually above work.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have your health and fitness. And then somewhere way down here, number 5 or 6 or 7 is hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would have asked me, hey, Ian, you got some free time on a Saturday. You got some free time on a weekend. I'm not reaching out to any of my friends or family to check in on them. I'm not working out. I'm like, oh, I'm going to just play some video games.
Yeah.
Like, when I get free time, that's what I prioritize. Mm-hmm. And I realized that's not how I want to be living my life. And in knowing myself before, of all the times that I tried to limit and fail,
yeah,
and I made these deals with myself, hey, we're going to have a bedtime, right?
Yeah.
We're only going to play on these days during the week. Like a week or two later, I'm like, that was a terrible decision. You didn't realize you were going to have this free time coming up. Yeah. We're going to go back on that decision. I was very good at negotiating myself out of the commitments that I made with myself.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? I need to take a full break. And I took a 6-month minimum break from video games. I deleted everything off my phone. I deleted everything off my computer. And the important thing was, I told my wife and I told my friends and coworkers. I was open with it. Because it's a lot harder to go back on that when you know people are going to be checking in on you. Like, hey, how's it going with video games?
Yeah.
Because when I told people, they kind of laughed at me. They're like, you need to quit video games? Really? But I did. And so in that 6 months, before I went back to them or anything, people started coming to me and said, hey, Ian, I heard you quit video games. Can you talk to my son? Can you talk to my nephew? Hey, what did we do about our kid or daughter on YouTube or Instagram? And then it wasn't just that though, Randy. It was friends my age with kids. A friend, he is 35. He said, Ian, I'm trying to get my master's degree on top of working full time. I don't have any time for this, but I can't stop playing this stupid mobile game. I've deleted it like 17 times, but I just reinstall it every time I'm stressed or I want to procrastinate. I literally don't know how to have self-control around this. Can you help me? And then I was talking to a mentor of mine. He's in his 60s. And I thought I would, you know, he's got figured out, right?
Yep.
And I'm telling him what I'm up to, just excited to talk to him. He's like, Ian, hold on. I'm on level 7,624 of a game called Toy Blaster. I was like, okay, well, why are you telling me this, Tim?
Yeah.
And he's like, I think I need to stop. I'm like, I think you need to stop. So I realized just in that 6 month gap, this has affected everyone on the planet. Everyone with access to a smartphone and technology that we have today on the internet has access to the global library of entertainment 24/7. And we all have to build self-control around it, or every single one of us, I believe, is going to develop a bad habit. So that's how self-control got started.
Wow. I mean, I got goosebumps as I hear you talk about this, because I think the challenge is, and I want people that are listening to this to understand, I don't care if it's pornography, drinking, drugs, or video games. All of these tap into the same dopamine receptors in our brain.
Yes, they do.
Which cause us to want to keep coming back for more. It's that unquenchable thirst that something provides, where you're just like, you can just never get enough water. You know, like when you're out working out and it's super hot and you're like, I can't drink enough to satisfy my thirst. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter what it is. And I think a lot of times people are just like, oh, well, you know, cell phones and video games, that's kind of benign. It can't be hurtful, but it can be super destructive.
Yeah,
it really can. And I remember when my kids got involved with like Xbox and the gaming, when Fortnite kind of became a thing, and that kind of took over. And Fortnite was its own type of World of Warcraft,
where
you just had to keep playing and you had to buy skins and you had to do this. And then they had all these, you know, guest player skins that everybody just had to have, because, oh, well, now Travis Scott is in here, so I want Travis Scott skin so I can do so-and-so. I mean, it's just, it never ends.
No, it doesn't.
And I think it's important for people to recognize it for what it is and not think that, oh, well, that's cute. It's just, you know, it's a little thing. It's a temporary issue, because like you said, it translated for you from high school to college into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always amazed that, you know, we see skits on TV of people, you know, making fun of grown men playing video games at 30 and 35 years of age. But that's not far from the truth.
No, it's not. That's actually common.
Right. Like exactly.
The average age of a video gamer is in their 30s.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm a little bit older than you, but I remember, you know, for me, it was, and I think I told you this, like Atari and Pac-Man, but we would play for a while, but then we would go outside and we would do things, you know, and there's always that joke where people would be like, I don't think most of our parents knew where we were on a Saturday. If they knew how far we would venture away from the house to go do things, those days are long gone.
Oh, yeah.
Now your kids are just sitting up in the house all day long. You can't even get them to go outside and get a little vitamin D.
Absolutely.
And I think because I say all that to say is that the stakes are much higher now. Just because we have the instant gratification of these devices, as I said earlier, they are with us at all times. So there's never a break. And so even what you're describing to me about your mentor, you know, I mean, I think we're all susceptible to this. And it's more a matter of, it's a human nature thing for us to have to say, okay, what do we do to undo what we've created, right? I know like lately I've been, you know, my wife and my sons, my biggest challenge with my sons is simply they, you know, I'm trying to get them to understand that there's so much more than the games out there. And I also, you know, we've also made a commitment recently, actually literally just in the last few days, that we were going to do a 30-day digital detox.
Okay.
You know, just
glad to hear.
I'm sure you would like that.
Yeah.
And the detox is, it's a legitimate detox, because it's more than just, it's like removing social media stuff off your phone, you know, having some real clear standards for how you do things. And I think that people think, they laugh at that and say, oh, well, yeah, that's, I don't know if that's going to work, but you have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to first acknowledge that, yeah, this is a problem. And so outside of the fact that, yes, I can control the Wi-Fi, I can turn the Wi-Fi off in my home at night so that the kids aren't up, you know, because otherwise they'll be up at 3 a.m. playing if you don't turn the Wi-Fi off. And then kids are even smart, like just, and I'm putting one of my son's business out on the street, but he figured out a workaround, because there's all kinds of workarounds online. You just got to go to YouTube. And it's like, this is how you freejack your parents' Wi-Fi so that it circumvents, you know, their ability to shut it down. And so, you know, kids are smart.
They learn it from each other.
They learn it from each other, right? So I think, you know, and I think sometimes as I'm sharing all this, I know there's parents that are nodding their head like, yeah, I kind of feel hopeless, Randy. And I don't know what to do in order to address this issue. I don't have an answer for it.
Yeah. I think the encouragement there, when you look at, and you mentioned earlier, and I want to dive into this a little more, the dopamine that's the same as the drugs. And I used to think like there's something about hard drugs or drugs like cocaine and heroin. There's something in that that alters our brain and we get hooked on something. But as researchers have dove into those more and more, it's the same thing. It is dopamine. And dopamine, it's not a good thing or bad thing. It's just how our brains learn how to build habits or learn how to want something in the future. And it can be a good habit or a bad habit.
Yeah.
And as we release dopamine, we do something for the first time and we realize it's enjoyable and fun. Dopamine releases and it's like a computer, right? It just says, yes, that was enjoyable. I want to do that again in the future because I like to do things that I enjoy. I like to do things that entertain me. And researchers at Harvard and Stanford, they learned that games and apps and technology can build that same loop that creates addiction. Yeah. It's called a tolerance-based cycle or addiction cycle. Mm-hmm. So essentially, just like with drugs, you always need a little bit more, or with alcohol, you need a little bit more, or with coffee, you know, you need one more cup to get the same feeling of energy, right? We can build addictions to things. And so with screens, it's so problematic because screens don't necessarily have the same negative consequences as a substance, right? Mm-hmm. They don't alter our state of being in the same way that something physical does. But at 12 hours a day, because you built up this tolerance to the number of funny videos or the number of video games that make you feel enjoyment, you feel that same feeling, you're going to build up a tolerance. Like, hey, you used to feel awesome after you won one game of Fortnite. Now you're like, yeah, I won a game. I got to win two now. I got to get actually a better ranking. I got to level up my character even more. I got to get more. I got to get more. I got to get more. And then the same thing with social media, right? So what? You got 200 likes. That would, you're kind of a big deal. Well, now getting 200 likes is kind of commonplace. I need 250 likes. Like if I'm not going, well, now I look at these other people. They get more likes than I do. They get more views. They get more whatever it is. We are going to always want more. And so that builds a tolerance to what used to give us the same amount of dopamine. Now we need more. And the same thing happens with essentially any type of addiction where it's something we enjoy. And that is something we have to be aware of as humans, right? Just across the board, that this can happen with screens. And I think that's something that has kind of snuck in under the radar with this, because us as parents or just us as adults, we don't really classify our phones and social media, because it's not always just one thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's, hey, I'm addicted to checking email to make sure I'm on top of things. And I'm a little bit addicted to the news. And I'm a little bit addicted to YouTube where I get on there.
Sure.
And I have a problem playing this game too much. So it's like, it's not just this one thing like World of Warcraft for me. I just need to quit that. Like it may be a combination of things that because you have accessibility to all of this all the time, you can get that dopamine hit whenever you need it. And that dopamine hit, people can't always do that with other substances or other things.
Right.
We can get that dopamine hit whenever we need to, or just by pulling out our phone, whether it's on a break at work, in the bathroom,
at a stoplight. It's insane. You know, you see people on their phones or on the highway.
Yes.
It has become, as I like to say, an all-consuming fire.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, you just can't put it out.
Yeah.
And saying all that, because I mean, again, I'm always trying to be a merchant of hope, right?
Yes.
So let's kind of backpedal just a bit. And I want to say, you know, in what you're learning now and how you're operating with self-control and the talks that you're having, what are you saying to parents who feel like it's too late?
Yes.
That their kids are already glued to the screens. How am I ever going to pull Johnny off that screen or Sarah off that screen?
So as I've gotten to do these talks, it's very fun, right? Because you'll go talk to an audience and then one of the doctors in the audience will bring you aside and they're like, hey, I'm actually a certified addiction specialist. I help people with this all the time. Your talk was great. I would say this differently. So it's been fantastic.
Sure,
I've gotten to partner with some of the local doctors here. And after I kind of got to do my talks, they actually brought me in and I got to do a partnership, and we got to teach essentially counselors, or 50 counselors in the region about what to do here. So what I'm going to share with you is essentially not from me. It's from Dr. Chad Imhoff. And the encouragement I would have in what you're doing with your 30-day detox with your family is one of those first steps. So whenever you're dealing with something that you are addicted to, you need to take at least a 30, if not even like a 60-day, like 2-month break.
Yeah.
And this depends on how bad it is, right? That is required because you need to give your brain a chance to reset its dopamine levels. And those dopamine levels that we were talking about previously, when this gets to an extreme example, the dopamine levels and what Dr. Imhoff shared with me that kind of blew my mind, the brain will reset and recalibrate when it knows it's getting these huge hits of dopamine repetitively. And if it's getting it every single day, it will stop releasing dopamine or will release dopamine 30 to 50% less for the day-to-day activities of going to school, doing your homework, doing your chores, getting your normal work done, interacting with your family. And so I talk to kids, and you see this most pronounced, like in middle school, 11 to 12 year old, and they don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
They don't want to go to school. They don't want to do anything but go back to their devices. And they literally don't. Their brain is saying, no, we're not going to release dopamine, which we know now is the one of the motivators for action, right? Dopamine gets released ahead of you doing something you know you enjoy. So like when we anticipate a meal that we like,
yeah,
dopamine releases and we're salivating just thinking about it, driving to the restaurant.
Absolutely.
And then we eat it and it's good. But dopamine actually gets us in the car to go there. So dopamine is literally being released less to do those other things. And to the parents who feel completely trapped, you're going to go through a detox period, and it's literally like 1 to 2 weeks are the worst part of it. Mm-hmm. And then that 30 to 60, 90 days is where the dopamine levels can reset. And I just want to encourage all the parents out there who do feel stuck and feel behind. I have talked to parents and we have gone through this and they say the same thing. My kid came back. My fun-loving kid came back, and it wasn't all perfect. Mm-hmm. There was still some serious issues there, but it is possible to reset the dopamine levels and remove something. And then at that point, after a month or two, you can start talking to, hey, how are we going to reintroduce this in a healthy way?
Yeah.
How are we going to reintroduce it with much more stringent boundaries? But I think the most important thing for even an adult doing this, or especially a parent with a child, like there may be a point where it's like, no, we built such a habit around this in our brain that we can't use it safely. Like,
yeah.
I can't go back to World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
I would love to. Yeah, yeah. And I remember a friend of mine saying, like, can't you just play a little? I'm like, no, I can't play just a little. Like when I get on there, that's what I want to do. And I just want to stay in that world because it's fun and enjoyable and it's very hard for me to pull out of it.
Yeah.
So there is hope. We can walk away from, and our kids can build a sense of accomplishment and identity outside of that world. But it is going to be difficult and it is going to take time.
Yeah.
Because video games and social media are built to give us positive affirmation.
Absolutely.
And tell us that we're good at things. And like, there's a reason we go to them. And so it's going to be hard. And we need as parents to find replacements for things that we can find enjoyment and get healthy releases of dopamine instead of that thing.
Yeah.
And it's never going to compete with the screens, but it's also not going to be addictive, which is why it's a good thing and a healthy thing to go to.
Yeah. You bring up so much. And as I'm sitting here thinking, as the organism that we are, the beautiful aspect about our bodies and our minds is that we can restore them, mm-hmm. right? It's not a foregone conclusion that, oh, he or she is too far gone. That's not the case. There is something about that. I know I just recently went on a fast. A 7-day water fast. And, after a few couple of days, and I was, I've done a few long fasts like that, but, I was just reading and I was just being reminded of how there is a restorative nature to that kind of thing when you set yourself apart from something. Mm-hmm. And in this case, food, where your body has a chance to kind of reset itself and recalibrate.
Absolutely.
The standard and the same way in your mind. And so, for instance, and I'll share in the show notes, for those that are watching this video, the detox that my family and I are about to follow, because we just started talking about it. So we're going to enter into it. We're going to do a 30-day detox. And it's a detox from like Netflix. I mean, I know this is going to hurt some people, but this means that you may not be able to finish up the second season of The Last of Us right now, which I just got into, but that's a whole different story. So I digress.
You'll be okay.
But yeah, I'll be all right. But I mean, again, the fruit of it is, you know, we're going to try to get outside more and walk more as a family. And just, you know, I've tried it because I'm a hardcore, like, you know, I'm just to self-admit, I'm a podcast junkie, right? Of course. And
you eat your own dog food. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have to eat my own dog food. And so a lot of times now I've just made it a practice of getting out sometimes because I go out every morning to work out. And now I don't always have ear pods in my head, in my ears. I just go out and I want to listen to the Cardinals or the Blue Jays or watch that little fox traipse across me on the Neocasca Creek Trail or something like that.
I heard that called, you take a raw walk.
Right. Raw walk. Yes.
Technology free.
I mean, there's just nothing like it though. It does feel good because you feel connected.
Yeah.
You feel connected to nature. Otherwise you kind of separate yourself and you really miss out on what things are. And I always think of like Emerson and others that, you know, talked about just this being communing and being one with nature. And it's impossible for us to be one with nature with AirPods in our head. And we just can't do it. So, and again, it's not an indictment on anybody else. I'm talking about myself. But if you see or hear yourself in what I'm sharing or what Ian's sharing, then there is hope, right? That,
yes.
That we can actually do something about it. And I mean, you're basically creating a whole business model around that. And it's not even just a business. To me, it's kind of like it's a mission-based idea that we all can go a little bit further in terms of gaining some self-control and building what I would call good habits. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you. I've read Atomic Habits like 4 times.
Yes.
It's a great book.
It is good.
I highly recommend it. Anybody that hasn't read Atomic Habits yet, you need to do it. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I will say is it's important. You mentioned that, you know, it takes 30, maybe 60 days to develop that. Because a lot of times we've heard people say, oh, well, it takes 21 days to build a habit. It actually takes like 3 times that.
Yeah.
It's like in the six, the actual number, they've studied this, the actual number of days that it takes, it's like 66 or more days it takes to actually build a foundational habit.
Yeah.
So you just setting yourself apart from the game for the weekend is never going to cut it.
No. And I think he talks about repetitions in that book.
Yeah.
Because it's not just days, right?
Yeah.
Like something you do once a week.
Right.
Like it only comes up once a week.
Right.
You have a habit. I do this once a week. Well, you need like 60 repetitions of that. That's going to take over a year.
Yeah.
Right? So for you to really ingrain that or build that in. But yeah, it's important. Those repetitions are important to build a new habit around how you use your device or your phone.
Yeah. And you have to, there's certain things that you have to do. If you struggle with pornography, you can't look at certain pictures. You can't look at certain images. If you struggle with alcoholism and you've gone dry, you can't just still go into the bar and test yourself to see, make sure that it's holding.
It doesn't work that way.
You know, my dad was, before he passed away, he was 11 years sober. That was one of his most proudest accomplishments, was coming to that place where he didn't give his body over to alcohol anymore. And he just used to tell me, it's a daily struggle, but I fight it by not putting myself in compromising positions.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with the phone. There's all kinds of apps on your phone that you can get that will keep you from, you know, going to certain sites and doing certain things and downloading certain games. And even like my 18 and 20 year olds still, they still have to ask for permission to download stuff from the app store.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds crazy, but I mean, again, I'm just like, I don't want them to just run all willy nilly out there and do what they want to do. And I want to add this one piece and then we can move on. But, you know, what I try to explain as I have boys, and I don't know people that are listening, some of you have boys and girls or just girls. And, you know, each kid is going to be different. You have to parent each kid differently. You're figuring that out now. But what I found, especially for young men, and Haight talks about it in the book, young men are obviously a lot less mature than young women are at the same age. So an 18-year-old boy and an 18-year-old girl, if I have to compare the two, the level of maturity is a lot higher in the young woman than it is in the young man.
Mm-hmm.
Most young boys don't really, that whole frontal cortex really doesn't form until about 25 or 26.
Yes.
So I always tell my 20-year-old, listen, you're going to make some mistakes and it's okay. because you're not quite fully there yet. You know, yes, you can vote. Yes, you can do these things, but you're still developing. And that's the challenge that I think these devices, they short circuit that development. And that's kind of what Jonathan Haidt is talking about. And that's why you have some of these issues. And I just want to bring up just a couple of the statistics that are almost like mind-boggling. So again, if you haven't read this book, I highly recommend it. But three of the biggest takeaways from his book is 150% increase in teen depression since 2010. Depression became roughly 2.5 times more prevalent for both girls and boys starting around 2012. And that's from the U.S. National Survey on Drug Use and Health. And this aligns directly with Haidt's argument that the rise of smartphones and social media in the early 2010s triggered a mental health crisis, especially among Gen Z.
Yes.
You know, and then it goes on, 189% increase in emergency room visits for self-harm among 10 to 14-year-old girls. So see it, and that's from 2010 to 2020, that study was done. And it nearly tripled over the decade. And that's from the CDC and the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control. And this is really powerful because a lot of times you think, oh, well, boys struggle with this more than girls do. Girls struggle with it the same way, but from different things.
Yes.
And social media plays a major part in that. And then finally, this last one, which again, kind of blew me away when I saw it, was simply that nearly 50% of U.S. teens say they are online almost constantly.
Yeah.
Almost constantly. Up from 25% in 2015. That was just 10 years ago.
Yep.
Okay. That's according to Pew Research. And obviously, this illustrates how immersive and the always on nature of screen time has intensified and why, you know, Haidt and so many others are arguing for limiting phone and social media use in key developmental years.
And I think that's the important piece. When he calls it the great rewiring, it's because during that, so the ages of 0 to 5 and the ages of like 13 to 18, right, puberty, that's where our brains are setting so many of our habits and our learned behaviors kind of in stone.
Yeah.
And that is malleable stone. Yeah. Because you can, anyone can retrain their brain. The process is called neuroplasticity.
Yeah.
But plastic is hard, right? You got to work on it to change it and manipulate it. So we are letting this generation wire their brains differently, and it is going to be very hard for them. And I'm talking to some of these kids who are in their 20s right now, and a guy is about 24 years old, and he said, Ian, I've been falling asleep to YouTube every night since I can remember as a kid. Like, can you help? Like, how do I stop?
Yeah.
And he lays awake in bed and he will say, I lay awake for an hour or two and I'm anxious. I can't fall asleep. And I got to just scroll, watch some YouTube, and then I can calm down.
Yeah.
And I can fall asleep. So that's an example of how kids are rewiring their brains and what their brains are looking for and what their brains need during adolescence and even during the early years, 0 to 5. But especially during adolescence, which he hits on in his book. And so that's why it's such an important piece. But the interesting thing is, in his book, he also shares that the rates of anxiousness and depression are up for people 18 to 25.
Absolutely.
They're up for people 36 to even up into 55.
Yeah.
And so the rates aren't up as much as with adolescence because we got through those formative years and we built some resiliency. We built some other things where we didn't go to devices in the same way that the next generation is.
Yeah.
But we also then had to essentially still learn, as we've gotten introduced to these, how to build self-control around them. And it's affecting everyone.
Yeah.
So the thing that I believe we all need to do is learn how to deal with this ourselves, so that we can help our children, so that we can help the next generation. And that's learning to, first step is awareness and admitting, hey, this is a problem. And that's what the book is so good at highlighting. It is a massive problem for the next generation. But I don't know any parent who reads that says, I don't have any room to grow here, right?
Yeah. We all do.
Yes.
We all do. And I've listened to a lot of other people. I'm a big fan of Cal Newport. He kind of talks about deep work and kind of rewiring our brain from that perspective. But one of the biggest challenges is, you know, how do you win the day, right? You know, it's like I'm always telling my kids, if you get up early enough in the morning, you can win the day just by doing some of the basic things and kind of going from there. But if you've been up till 2 a.m. in the morning playing video games, there's no day to be won.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean,
you spent
like,
your day
you
yesterday.
You already spent your day yesterday. So, yeah. And again, it's, I think people are fully, well, for the most part, I think people are aware. It's just, it's the how. How do I, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's why self-control is such an important organization because, you know, you are kind of saying, here are some of the breadcrumbs that people need to follow in order to get out of whatever jam that they're in when it comes to their addiction, mm-hmm. specifically some of these electronic addictions that exist. Yeah. So I would love for you maybe just to kind of share a little bit about how you guys have formulated and what beyond just going out and speaking at a lot of different places, which I would imagine that your schedule for speaking is going to only continue to increase.
Yeah.
But outside of that, the practical side of this is how we do it. What is self-control doing to kind of help people navigate these waters?
Yeah. So we share essentially a step framework that we've worked on with doctors and addiction therapists. And the first step is awareness and saying, you know what, I have a problem.
Right.
I have
right.
And that's the first step of any 12-step sure. program or any addiction problem. And the thing that I help people realize is you don't have to admit, like, I am addicted, right? I have an addiction to my phone or whatever it is. An addiction is just a bad habit
mm-hmm.
that has gotten completely out of control.
Sure.
Right? So we just have to say, you know what? I have a bad habit around my phone or my device and I want to change. And then we have to figure out and control access and give ourselves a chance to let the dopamine receptors that are pushing us so much towards that activity at least reset and kind of recalibrate. And that control access can look like a bunch of different things depending on how deep we're in it. You mentioned pornography, and that is one of the, I think, the most difficult addictions to get out of.
Yeah.
Because of accessibility and because of how easily we can get around and we can get access to it. And that most people try to limit access and then find themselves, the dopamine surge is so high in their brain to go seek it out that they'll seek another way and they'll find another way to get access to it. So that controlling access, even if it's a video game or something like that, if it's a silly video game on your phone, just like you have your kids, they need a password from parents to add an app and install. Ask a friend, ask your spouse, your partner, your someone you trust to be like, hey, I know this is ridiculous, but can you put this limitation? Like, can you put parental controls on my phone? And that's going to take an incredible step of humility, an incredible step of, you know what, this is actually a problem for me. But if we're going to take mediocre action to get results, we're going to get mediocre results.
Absolutely.
If we're willing to take more serious action, we're going to actually see the results. So that controlling access is an important piece. Accountability and talking to other people. There's a reason why the most successful diet groups, the most successful exercise groups are with other people.
Yeah.
Right? There's a reason why, like, at-home gym equipment doesn't work as well as in the gym equipment, right? Like, you're around other people. There's this built-in accountability. Like, we run faster when there's someone else running with us. Otherwise, we'll just, you know, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
A little bit of peer pressure goes a long way as far as that's concerned.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that social piece is important. And that, to me, especially with something like the phone, it's a position of vulnerability because you're admitting you have a problem and you need to improve something around something that feels like it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
And just talking through that and being like, no, I seriously do need help on this. Like I told you before, when I told my friends hey, I got a problem with video games. Some of my friends laughed at me. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Figure it out, man.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
We got bigger problems than that.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but this is something that I don't want to continue to have a problem with. And after the initial laughing, they all got behind me on it. Mm-hmm. And then some of those friends that were in the room where everybody's laughing were just laughing because everybody else was laughing. Some of those friends.
Nervous laughter because they saw themselves in that
situation. Some of those friends came to me and they asked for help.
Yeah.
And they're some of the people that I helped out of it because it was, this is a problem for me too. So being kind of open and honest and getting that social, essentially at this point, I love the book Anxious Generation because I feel like we're hitting a tipping point.
Yeah.
I feel like we're hitting a tipping point in society where we're like, everybody's knows this is a problem. So we talk through that social piece. And we talk through the amount of time that you need to take a break so that we talk through that kind of amount from atomic habits, like really like 1 to 2 months, if not longer, to reset. And then you do need replacement activities.
Yeah.
Right? because when I quit video games, I came home stressed from work. I had a new baby in the house. My wife and baby weren't there. And I had a very stressful day at work. And I went from the pantry to the freezer, back to the pantry, ice cream, candy, chips. Yeah. And I, for about 10 minutes, I binge ate for the first time in my life. And I kind of stopped. I had a bag of chips in my hand. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Because previously I would have gone and logged on to video games.
Yeah.
Just got some, and I didn't realize how much I was medicating my emotions and my stress with video games. And so I did get some value out of games, and we do get some value out of scrolling. We do get some value out of relaxing and watching a Netflix show that's enjoyable, but there is a cost. And can we build habits, and can we build ways to deal with and replace those things that we were going to video games or going to our screens for that don't have the risk of addiction? They don't have this. And that's where, like, I transferred it to, hey, before I get home from work, at that point, I work from home now, but at that point, I had to commute. I would stop at the park by my house, and I would walk around, and I would just literally release some endorphins to release some stress before I walked into a stressful situation with a new baby at home. And so I had to figure out how to build some replacement activities. And one of the things that I've talked to therapists and doctors about this, you have to pick a replacement activity that you can do in the same time that you go to those devices, right? And so that might look like a bunch of different, maybe you go to your video game and a bunch of different things. So you might need three different replacement activities.
Sure.
I go to my phone while I'm at a stoplight. Like, you just need to put the phone away, and you need to, like, get a, I don't know, audiobook or something else to do in the car, like a fidget toy or something, so that you're not distracted in a stoplight and you can focus on driving.
Yeah.
And the person behind you is not honking at you. But then in the evening, right, what's something you can do in the evening? And you find a replacement activity, whether it's exercise or reading a physical book or something like that, or it's just engaging in conversation. Maybe you bust out the puzzles or the board games or something like that. But you replace it with other activities that are healthy and that you enjoy. They still need to release some dopamine for you that you enjoy, but that don't come with the, hey, here's a side effect of addiction. Warning label not included. So yeah, hopefully they will be soon. But those replacement activities are important. And then the last thing, we talk about knowing your story, right? Knowing your story means, for me uniquely, here's the things that I've had a problem with and I've had to walk away from.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be embarrassing and difficult because the things I have an issue with, maybe you don't have an issue with.
Sure.
There are a lot of things at this point that are kind of becoming universally a problem, but I've talked to people who are embarrassed about the specific video game that they play.
Sure.
Or the specific game that they're on level 7,624 of, right? Like, it's, that's not a position of like, yeah, I don't play that game, I don't have a problem, but for me, it's this game, or for me, it's this. I've talked to people who are addicted to scrolling Zillow, and they're just looking at the houses around here in Northwest Arkansas, and they're like, I just bought a house, you know, 2 years ago, but I'm still on the email list, and I'm looking at houses. And that's not to say, hey, that's fun and enjoyable to do, but saying, hey, like, let's take a break from this and recognize that I want to do other things during that time. And so helping people walk through those steps. And then I think all of us at this day and age in 2025 have to build the skill of recognizing when something's a bad habit and having the courage to do something about it.
Yeah.
And so our self-control is a nonprofit. We're a 501(c), and we essentially go into, we're doing a screen time tour in schools right now. So we're going to a couple schools in Springdale. We're going to be in one next week. And I'm trying to get this message to the parents through the schools, but also directly to the students, because I talked to first grade class and I thought I was wasting my time. I told my wife, we don't need it yet. And a little first grade girl talking about YouTube raised her hand and she said, how do I stop?
Yeah.
If I want to stop and I don't know how. And I realized I got to get the message directly to the kids. I was literally talking during Red Ribbon Week, like, be safe, kids, stay off drugs, kids. And we're talking about the drug of dopamine.
Yeah.
And so we go and we talk to schools, but we've also been going and talking to businesses, because essentially this generation, right, is going into the workforce.
Yeah.
And the statistics are,
they're ill-equipped,
shockingly high for how many people, even while they're physically in an office, but especially if they're remote, they're multitasking and playing some video games, watching some Netflix shows while they're working. And the number of mental health days since 2017 is up 300%.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to help businesses with this as well to essentially educate their workforce on how they can build self-control and get their job done. And then we've been working, so it's mainly with schools. We've been doing other parent events as well in the local community. I'm going to go get to train. We've trained staff at multiple different government centers as well on how they can help, especially ones working with youth. So we're trying to, and I feel compelled to share my story and try to help as many people around this as possible.
Yeah.
Because in turning away from it myself, I recognized how big of an issue it is and how pervasive it is.
Yeah.
Across every age, every demographic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you said a mouthful. And I mean, certainly you have your work cut out for you. I mean, that's the understatement of the year. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's one of the reasons why this has grown with very little marketing, a lot of word of mouth. People have heard about what you're doing. And I mean, I think this is more rhetorical, but I think the reason why the message is spreading so fast is because I think in the back recesses of most of our minds, we recognize that this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That we have to figure out how do we overcome. And I think there's a lot of opportunities. I'd be curious to know what your thoughts are in terms of, you know, I know you were recently at the Capitol for an event. And how do you feel like policymakers are responding to this concern? Are other, do you feel like our elected officials understand the need for this? I know Governor Sanders does because she was one of the first ones to say, yeah, we need to take phones out of schools. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I was so excited when, you know, my two sons started Fayetteville High School this past year. And they were like, yeah, we're limiting phone use. And mm-hmm. I saw the decline in the number of texts during the day and interactions and what have you. But, you know, I mean, we still have a ways to go. But do you think that as a whole, lawmakers understand the problem and are willing to figure out some way to address it?
I do. And I think it's so Governor Sanders, her husband, and she shared this. I was at that event with Jonathan Haidt and Governor Sanders at Crystal Bridges a few months back. She shared that her husband read The Anxious Generation, gave it to her and said, you need to read this. And then she mailed a copy of it to all other 49 governors yeah. across the United States.
Yeah.
So our state of Arkansas has just passed in the current legislative session, the Bell to Bell No Cell School bill. And so what that means is the restrictions for Fayetteville High School are going to get even higher. They're essentially, because one of the things that one of the schools that I went and talked to, they said, hey, we've put some pretty strict restrictions in place already, mm-hmm. but we don't restrict the kids at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And you go into a school cafeteria of a bunch of seventh and eighth graders, and it's quiet.
Yeah.
You just hear, it's awkward.
Yeah,
you hear a bunch awkward. Of like, and it's almost like talking is uncomfortable, right? Like you hear some smatterings here.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there,
yeah.
But like
yeah.
in your area, if no one else is talking, everybody else is on their device. You're the weird one for wanting to tell a joke and talk to people around you.
Yeah.
So that bell to bell, even giving kids the ability and saying, hey, we're going to get that social time. That's such an important part of school, right? Is building those social skills. It's not, we don't just learn about math, sciences, and reading at school. We learn how to interact with our peers and other people.
Sure.
So I think it's a huge deal. And the reason I'm confident that our lawmakers are doing and will continue to do something about this is because they are experiencing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of issues.
Whether with their kids or grandkids.
Yeah. Their kids or grandkids or themselves.
Or themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This issue, I think the next frontier for it is going to be to help protect the kids 0 to 5. Because like I mentioned with that first grade girl, we're doing a lot and we're focusing a lot on the teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
But 68% of kids by the age of 8 have their own tablet. And the tablet is effectively the cell phone of the young adult, the younger ages. And
can I add one piece to that, which a lot of people don't know this whole story, but, you know, Steve Jobs was asked when he came out with the iPad, he was like, do your kids enjoy playing with it? And the first thing out of his mouth was, I don't even let my kids play with it.
No way.
iPad.
Yeah.
So the creator of this technology knew the power of the technology. And I mean, I think that should speak volumes. I tell people that story all the time. They're like, that can't be true. It very much is true. And I think that we need to recognize that. And I've even read some articles from some game developers that don't let their kids play games.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a hit and a half for any one of us to understand. Oh, okay. Yeah. I get it, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off, but people need to understand that stakes are high.
Stakes are high. And I think that regulation, that one's going to be harder to regulate, right? But I'm confident we're going to get there and figure something out, because that's where kids are building habits in the first place. And just for anybody listening, I talk to a lot of parents that are like, oh no, I've ruined my kid. I gave him a tablet. Like, no, you didn't. And first off, you can take it away if it's causing problems.
Yeah.
And please do. I talked to a mom and she had a 7-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. She gave her an old iPhone, right? Yeah, you upgrade, you're 15, absolutely. You got another one sitting around.
Yeah.
And it wasn't connected. It couldn't make calls. It could just connect on their Wi-Fi at home. Like they only had YouTube Kids on there. Mm-hmm. They put all the protections that they thought they should put in place. But by the time their daughter was 11, she was depressed and she was starting to have suicidal ideations and thoughts. Yeah. And they were crushed because they were there every step along the way. They took it away for weeks at a time. They did things, and it still built addictions to where that daughter was sneaking that phone into her room at night and from 1 to 4 a.m. was binging YouTube Kids, but she was still able to watch the videos that she wanted to play video games on it. And the parents were crushed. And the mom finally had enough, and she walked into her garage and she grabbed a sledgehammer and she walked inside and she just smashed. No, Randy, she did not smash the iPhone. She handed the sledgehammer to her 11-year-old daughter and she said, don't you see what it's doing to you? Do you want this to keep continuing?
Yeah.
And the 11-year-old daughter smashed the iPhone. And it took a few weeks, but the mom reported what we shared earlier, that she started to come back.
Uh-huh.
And there was still some behavioral issues
but
she started to laugh again at the dinner table. She started to engage. She started to come back. So I just want, and I've heard so many stories, especially from our generation even, right?
Yeah.
Of parents being like, the Nintendo, like the old 16-bit Nintendo. Kids, what's going on? Get outside.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dad. Like 3 days in a row, Dad comes in, smashes the Nintendo, throws it in the trash can, right? So don't be afraid. I know they're expensive and it feels like a nice piece of equipment and technology.
I've ideated fantasies of just smashing my kids' Xbox. I really have. And I'm just like, you know, they're at an age now where they want to buy their own.
Yeah, they can go get their own.
And I'm just like, dude, sometimes I just feel like I felt like I introduced it. And you're right. As a parent, sometimes we feel guilty because we sometimes unintentionally present certain things into the equation that take on a life of their own. And in this case, that could be a gaming system, PlayStation, Xbox, you fill in the blank.
So here's the hope and encouragement that I would share with any parent or even grandparent who's in that situation. You get the distinct and 100% necessary opportunity to help that child build self-control and figure out how to use that wisely.
Yeah.
Because when they turn 18, 19, they're going to go get access to the addictive phones, the addictive technology. The goal, in my opinion, and what I try to teach any parent or any person, if you're helping a young person through this, you can't ignore it.
Yeah.
You can't just say, hey, you know what? You're not getting anything till 18 ever, and good luck when you're on your own.
Right.
Because I went off and look what happened to me. I even had pretty good restrictions in place with video games and I still got addicted. What I needed to learn was the ability to recognize when something is unhealthy for me, when it's a bad habit. And I, as even a child, need to say, I want to do something about it.
Yeah.
And one of the schools that we went and talked to, I ran into the mom. I didn't know her ahead of time, but she came up to me and she said, did you talk at my kid's school? And I'm like, where was it? Oh, yeah, we talked a couple months. She said, my son came to me with his iPad and said, can you please charge us in the kitchen? And I need you to put more parental restrictions on this. And she was like, that was you. I was like, I'm not sorry. I'm actually excited, because think about anything, right? If a child or an adolescent or a teenager says, I want to do something about this.
Yeah.
That's the first step. Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of kids. I get pulled into situations where I talk with adolescents. And one of them just straight up said to me, he's like, the only reason I'm talking to you is because my parents made me.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, we got a ways to go before I can help you out.
Yeah.
Because if we don't want to do something, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And the same is for our kids. So if you've given your child or your grandchild a device, look for those crucial conversations, those opportunities to talk with them and say, hey, if you don't like that, that's making you moody or irritable, let's do something about it. Let's try to recognize when that game or social media is leading us into an unhealthy pattern. And let me help you. And even me as a grandparent, or even me as a parent, I've had to do this, and I've had to do it here or here. And you can model it to them how to build healthy habits and self-control around technology.
Yeah, I love that. This is my last final question for you, because you've really dropped some great knowledge and some wisdom around how we can start to combat this. Given that we are in Northwest Arkansas, if we became the national leader in healthy tech use, what do you think that would look like? Because you're starting it. I mean, you're encouraging things that are happening in Little Rock, which is our state capital, to happen. And you're taking a lot of the research that you've used to really kind of make a case for self-control. Mm-hmm. But what do you think that would look like for us here in this area if we're able to really tap into the zeitgeist of the moment of just understanding how pervasive the phone is and all these other devices and how we can get control of it and become better for it?
Yeah, I think when you look at national studies and even global studies on happiness, there's a long-standing, over 80 years study at Harvard University. And they studied, hey, what is it that makes people happy and has them live longer? And it's community.
Yeah.
It's social connection.
Yeah.
Those social connections are so pivotal to our health. They're the reason we want to get in shape
right,
so that we can run around with our kids. They're the reason we want to eat healthy. They're the reason we want to put away our bad habits. I think about my own dad. And he stopped smoking cigars when my sister asked him to stop smoking cigars so that he would be around for the grandkids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so those social relationships, like when you talk to anybody on their deathbed, what do they talk about? We talked about Steve Jobs or even Steve Jobs, who I would not necessarily expect to talk about. He talked about his success and like what he did in building one of the world's most successful companies. We talked about relationships and the regrets and the successes and the things that he had around that. It's always people.
Yeah.
And if we can recognize that and put our devices down and look up at the souls and the other people just in the rooms that we inhabit around us, I think we'll see. If you looked at national studies of the whole region, they say, what is going on with Northwest Arkansas? Their happiness levels are up.
Yeah.
Their social connections are up. What are they doing differently?
Yeah.
And it would be the grandparents not wanting to put the kids in front of the screens and not wanting to give the kids what they're asking to. It's the modern day candy, right?
Right.
Like, I want to be the loved grandparent. So yeah, you get more iPad time.
Yeah. Right?
And
yeah.
I'm not trying to make any grandparents feel guilty about giving their kids some of those things and having, but man, what are you going to pass along to your kids? What is the wisdom that you are going to teach your grandchildren? And it's the parents recognizing this and not going to devices themselves to deal with their anxiety and their stress and figure out healthy habits so that they can model it for the next generation. And then I think it's within the younger generation, within Gen Z and even the kids growing up today, who are the leaders who are going to take a step and we're going to say, hey, peers, this isn't working.
Right.
And you're going to see self-organized things going on just here in Northwest Arkansas. How can we take steps away from technology? Hey, we're going to create a club that's a no-tech club. There's no screens. You leave your device at the door or whatever it is. Like, you're going to see young people. That's what I think it would look like across all the generations to see Northwest Arkansas be a leader in technology and screen time.
I love that. Well, there, folks, I think we have our marching orders here. Ian has laid it out perfectly for us. Ian McCray, for those that are listening to you and what the wisdom that you've shared over this past hour, if anyone wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. So you can go to selfcontrol.com. That's self-control, like it's spelled on my t-shirt.com. We release essentially a weekly or every other week blog. So you could sign up for our newsletter to get engaged with us there. We are on Instagram and Facebook because that's where our audience and the people we're trying to help are. So you could follow us there at Build Self Control. So it's Build and then Self, CTRL, Build Self Control. So you can engage with us there. We share a lot of tips on Instagram and Facebook on there as well. We are going to be launching some cohorts coming up here in the summer where people can go through essentially a few week or 8 week course where you can go through it with other people, other parents or other people in your age group. So that's something we're going to be trying out because of that social connection.
Yeah.
People need that help to change their habits around this. So we're looking at essentially launching some of those and walking people through a lot of the things that we've talked about here today,
mm-hmm.
but in a more structured format where you have time to work through them and implement some things. So that's something you could sign up to our newsletter at selfcontrol.com to find out more information on when those are coming out.
And I think there would be tremendous benefit to stuff like that, even a self-directed detox program, mm-hmm. you know, of this. And it's like, because there's a lot of studies that show how these can be put into play. But, you know, my son found it. And it was the crazy thing was my son came to my wife and I and said, hey, I want to try this. Mm. And I was like, hallelujah, you know, let's do this. So, I mean, here's an 18-year-old who loves his video games. And he was like, you know, I think I really want to do this. We've been talking and talking and talking. And so I say all that to say to parents, don't give up. Your kids are listening. You just have to keep driving home to them the point that you really do care about them. You care about their future and you want to give them the most advantages possible. And one of the ways that you can give your kids an advantage is by helping to decrease the reliance that they have on this device right here or on their Xbox or PlayStation or Wii or all those other devices that they have, because there's a big world out there just waiting for these kids and waiting for them to put their thumbprint on their lives. And so I really want to encourage you to take advantage of that. So Ian McCready, thank you so much.
Thank you, Randy,
for joining us today and talking about self-control. And we'll continue to spread the good news of what you're doing. And as we learn more in the future, we will be sharing that out. But certainly folks that are listening to this episode, check out the show notes for the contact information. I'll make sure you have all of Ian's contact information. If you want to get in touch with them, let them know that you heard about it first on the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. And so that's about it. So thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Randy.
Absolutely. Well, folks, that's a wrap. That's an episode today. I want to again shout out podcastvideos.com for supporting us and allowing us to do this episode here at their location right up here in Rogers, right around the corner from the Amp and Topgolf and all those cool places. It's nestled up in the corner here. You can come up here and get your podcast videos made. They do an excellent job. They have a state-of-the-art facility here. And Eric Howerton and Parker Dodson and the rest of the team are doing amazing work when it comes to creators creating information and disseminating it to the widest audience possible. They've made a way for me to get this video out to you guys. And so I really appreciate their effort and work. Remember, the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast comes out every Monday, rain or shine. You can find us on every major podcasting platform. You can find us on YouTube. You can even listen to an excerpt of this podcast on Ozarks at Large. Typically every Tuesday, but generally we're on there on KUAF, the local NPR affiliate here in Northwest Arkansas. So I really want to encourage you, to, especially this episode, listen again, share it with a friend, because sharing is caring. And as Ian said earlier, it takes a village. So we all have to be part of the change that we so desperately seek, not just for ourselves, but for those that we love and for those that are around us and our community. So my challenge to you is go out and figure out what you need to give up. And let's figure out how to do that in a way that makes sense so that the end result is sustainable over the long term. And I will report back. I will share. I'll be very transparent about how this digital detox goes and let you guys know how that went. And I'll actually share a link to the video that my son saw on YouTube, of all places, about doing a digital detox. It's kind of meta if you think about it, but it is what it is. And so I'll definitely share that with you. But that's all I have for you this week. Thank you for joining us. And especially thank you for joining us on video. If you like our videos and you want us to do more videos, please let me know. Just send us a message via email. Subscribe to our newsletter at IamNorthwestArkansas.com. And remember, we cover the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life right here in the Ozarks. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and we'll see you here next week. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit IamNorthwestArkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Attention Northwest Arkansas businesses and talent seekers. Introducing Onboard NWA.com, your hyperlocal job board crafted for our unique community. Struggling to find the perfect match for your job openings? Onboard NWA simplifies the hiring process, connecting you with the region's top talent through tailored talent matching solutions. Whether you're an employer seeking expertise or a professional looking for your next opportunity, Onboard NWA is here for you. Discover more at onboardnwa.com and let's build the future of Northwest Arkansas together.